D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service, and presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Talking beef. It's what's for dinner. Or, where's the beef? What other beef-related slogans am I missing? Are those the only two good ones?
I don't know. What was the beef jerky one?
What's that one? Snap into a Slim Jim?
I guess so.
I guess that would
remember,
be in there.
Remember the dog?
Is the
was it the dog?
Messing with Sasquatch? That was another
yeah, there we go. Beef. What was the dog one where he was, you know, it was something like beef and they came running. I forget what it's called. So many beef ones.
Where's the beef? Well,
that where's the beef is one of the all times. That's a good one.
They need to bring it back out, Pat.
They do.
They need to bring that back.
They do. So over at The Ringer last week, it was Beef Week. And Steven Ruiz wrote a great story with the headline, "We're in the golden age of cornerback wide receiver beef. This isn't just about football rivalry. This is football hatred." And Steven Ruiz wrote, quote, "Cornerbacks and wide receivers have been at odds throughout the history of the NFL, but the beef between the two positions now seems more personal than ever. Jerry Rice and Deion Sanders may have formed the greatest cornerback-receiver matchup of all time when they faced off in the early 1990s, but there were no on-field altercations between the two. It was more rivalry than beef, even if they talked some trash. But any good sports beef is built on a foundation of hate, personal hate. Not the kind of competitive hate that makes for a good rivalry over time. I'm talking about two athletes who just don't F with each other for reasons that can't be fully explained or rationalized." And I thought it was a great look at the receivers who were best at bringing the beef, cornerbacks who were best at bringing the beef, including a former Titans player who a lot of you absolutely love. But I thought we should start this way. Since we are seated next to a all-pro wide receiver, I want you to take us into the mind, Derek, of a receiver when you're dealing with some of those feisty corners, mm-hmm. when there's beef. Did you have beef with anybody?
Beef from the standpoint of I didn't want to deal with you off the field. I didn't deal with you off the field anyway. I had a family. I mean, you know, at a point, it's like, all right, we off the field. I ain't got to see you again until we – you know, play again or maybe even next year. So I am not consuming myself with you. But then again, you know, it wasn't until sort of like the last part of my career, the last few years of my career, the advent of social media really started to come on. So maybe, you know, but then again, I'm not that type of guy to be sitting there trying to go with somebody back and forth over Instagram. And I think that's what's happening now. Because you had those, whether it's Deion Sanders, Michael Irvin, Deion Sanders, Jerry Rice, Deion Sanders, Andre Rison, you've had your receivers and DBs that would go at one another. But it was always respect there. These kids don't respect one another. That's why they go at each other the way they do. It's like playing my brother when we were younger. I'm trying to go at you as hard as I can. I'm trying to take you like whatever by any means to win this game. But that was because I respected you as a player, as a big brother. So I wanted to beat you. And it wasn't, you know, after that, it was just like, oh, we good, you know, or sometimes it did linger a little bit. But then after that, I was like, all right, we're fine. You know, we sleep in the same household, you know. But I think
those are the best beats.
Yeah, those are – guys just don't respect one another now. That's basically what it boils down to. And social media doesn't help, you know, because guys feel they got to say something at every turn. That's why I enjoy watching, you know, guys like Marvin Harrison, you know, guys that didn't – just went out and, you know, did their job, Smith – Jacksonville, he and McCardell, they just went out and did their job. Randy Moss, he just went out and did his job. The best receiver ever, besides Jerry Rice, Megatron, he just went out and did his job. They didn't have to talk. You didn't have to get, you know, get in a beef. It wasn't personal. It was about me going out there. You respecting me, I'm respecting you, but I'm coming at you. Once it's done, we're done. But I understand some people can take it a little bit far. But I was never about that. I was about between the lines. And if you wanted to make it personal after that, and you didn't want to, you know, say if you saw me, didn't want to do it, that's your problem. It ain't mine. You know, I did what I needed to do on the field, or you did what you needed to do on the field. After that, as long as you don't say anything crazy, you know, out of pocket. And I think guys nowadays are saying things out of pocket. They're doing things out of pocket. They're getting on social media.
Okay, so the social media. Uh-huh. If the social media was existing back then, mm-hmm. do you think it would have been different for you?
Or might have been
more vulnerable to something like that happening?
No, because the first thing that would have happened was, first I would have thought about it. Then if I would have put it out, Marcy would have said something. And then I think, no, seriously. Yeah. Then I would have thought about my, you know, the kids. Like, they seeing.
Right.
I thought about stuff like that. Like, you know, and guys don't think about, they really don't think about things like that. How that will sort of impact their kids if they choose to play that sport. How that will impact them. The things that are said about their dad or their mom, you know, and, you know, their parents look back on it 10 years from that, 10 years later or 20 years later, and like, man, should I have really sent that tweet or should I have really did that? It's all about a lack of respect. I enjoy the competitiveness. I enjoy the beef on the field. That's what I enjoy.
Willie, Courtland Finnegan got his own section in this story from Stephen Ruiz. Stephen Ruiz wrote, quote, former Titans corner Courtland Finnegan was a generational S-head on the field who became a poster child for the pestering corner archetype. He was an undersized seventh-round pick out of Samford who liked to get into the heads of opposing receivers to make up for his physical limitations. Unsurprisingly, he and Steve Smith had some on-field issues when they squared off, but Finnegan became a household name after he provoked Andre Johnson, the usually mild-mannered Texan star receiver, into dishing out an unforgettable butt-whooping. The video is hosted on the Texans' official website with the title, Andre Johnson Beats Down Courtland Finnegan.
Yeah, that was a good one. But the one thing I did like, listen, Courtland and I had our run-ins on the field, and it was heated.
What was his technique? What did he try to do?
He was just one of those guys. Like, he was an agitator. I remember on one play specifically, and I got upset. And I think we end up, tussling and going, and he ended up getting a penalty. And then Bullock can tell a story better than I can. But it was one of those deals where the play was away from me, was away from us. And he acted as if he was just going to be like, oh, I'm good, good. But then he, all of a sudden, when you relax a little bit, then he going to come at you. He didn't come at you right when you were ready. It was like, you surprised? But then he comes at you. And that's what happened with me. And he and I started going at it. But I respected him as a player. He was a good player. He was a hard player. You knew after that, I'm gonna be on my team. I'm gonna be on my toes each and every play because I don't know when that one play will come where I'm not and he still is. So in essence, he made you up your game, you know, because the one thing you respected about him, at least I did, is that you knew who he was and he stuck to it. He didn't try to sit here and make friends with you during the game and all that other stuff. He was who he was. And, okay, let's go.
And I don't know if you got to know him off the field at all.
He's a cool dude off the field. I've talked to him a few times. He's a cool dude off the field.
He did a radio show weekly with us for a couple of seasons, a couple of very good Titans teams, 07 and 08, mm-hmm. when they were a playoff team. And, of course, in 08, we know they were the number one seed. That was probably the height of his stardom. Mm-hmm. Which was a brief window, right? Yeah. But for a seventh-round pick, that was a big hit. Like, this Titans team is desperate for a hit like that, whether it's a seventh-rounder or a fifth-rounder. Just to have that type of player mm-hmm. that you grabbed that low in the draft, that sped up the rebuild. But he would get asked about that every week, and he was very personable on the air. And he used to talk about it was a switch.
Yeah.
He literally said, I have it on my leg. Mm-hmm. I switch it on during the game, then I switch it off after the game. He was joking about it, but it was mm-hmm. true. I think it was when you're the underdog, mm-hmm. like he was, I think
you
he
have
felt
to
like
be
he
that
needed
way.
To be yeah. that way. He had to have that edge to perform. And it did catch up to him a few times. Listen, like that Andre Johnson.
The Titans have had a history just think about this. And maybe they don't have that anymore. And maybe that's what they need. I go back to, you know, just each individual. I go back to guys like Blaine Bishop. Off the field, Blaine's cool as a fan.
That's a perfect example.
He's cool as a fan. He can get a little, you know, his voice raised a little bit, but he's cool as a fan. But you get him on the field, you don't want to mess with him. And I don't care if you are his teammate. You don't want, like, y'all are going to go at it. I look at myself. I was the same way. You look at other guys that, like, kind of sort of like, as you go down the line, I'm sure Kevin Byard was the same way. I'm sure Jarrell Casey was the same way. Guys that they know when that switch turns on, it's no, they're full steam ahead. And maybe they don't have many of those guys now that can flick on that switch and play at a high level and push themselves to a limit, but not crossing over that threshold of putting their team in bad positions. I don't think they have those guys, enough of those guys, let's say that. Because they did have those guys, I believe, during the Vrabel era. I think during right before Vrabel got there at the tail end of Malarkey era, I think they started developing those guys. I think over the last course of the three seasons, they don't have enough of those guys. They thought that bringing in who was the kid they end up, the linebacker, they brought in to free agent 2 years ago. He ended up going to another team. What was his name? San Francisco.
He got all the penalties. Aziz Al-Shaair.
Yeah, Aziz Al-Shaair. He was their
Shire.
He was their light switch guy, but it seemed like he didn't know where the line was.
Yeah,
you know, and he crossed over one too many times. They need guys that are able to flick that switch and play with a passion that is not matched. But then when they're not on that field, switch it off. But anytime they cross those lines, whether it be in practice or in the game, that switch comes on, and you can't cut it off until practice stops. I'm not sure they got enough of those guys.
I'm thinking of the corners specifically.
Yeah.
Who will ever forget Richard Sherman's WWE-style promo after that game on Michael Crabtree? And Aaron Andrews just sort of sitting there like, okay, I'm just going to hold this microphone and see where this goes.
See, that was a disrespect because there was a snatching of the chain. And was it Crabtree and another player?
Michael Crabtree
got into it with a few people.
Michael Crabtree was involved in the few beefs.
He had multiple beefs.
He did have multiple beefs.
Yeah, but stuff like that crosses over into disrespect. And then you have, you know, not liking each other off the field. Like, man, it's a game. Like, you know, y'all are so embedded and intertwined now that having beef off the field just don't make sense.
It was Aqib Talib.
Yes.
With the gold
chain.
Yes,
the gold chain. Yes.
Yes. Mm. Talib twice snatched Crabtree's gold chain during post-play altercations.
See,
when the Broncos played the Raiders in 2016.
That's disrespectful. That is just flat out, like, disrespectful. And sports shouldn't be about that. It should be about respecting the player but playing at a level that if he don't match it, it's going to be obvious to everybody.
Talib said, quote, "He's just been wearing that chain all year, man. It's just been growing on me. I said if he wears that chain in front of me, I'm going to snatch it off. He wore it in front of me, so I had to snatch it off."
See, stuff like that, like, it doesn't mean, like, what does it mean? Nothing.
People love it, though.
Yeah, you're right. People do love it. But when I look at beef or I look at, you know, what I would deem, you know, just competitive being in a competitive realm,
stuff. Categories, a trash-talking corner or a trash-talking wide receiver, that's not necessarily a beef.
Yeah.
The beef has to cross the line into what we're talking about here with the grab and the chain. Was that the theme of the piece? Like, how many other, like, personal one-on-one? Because we can all name the ones that would really be trash-talking in all sports,
favorite.
Right?
I'll tell the you feistiness. My favorite, being a Saints fan, is Mike Evans versus Marshawn Lattimore. Now, Lattimore is no longer with the Saints. He's with the Commanders. But I believe Mike Evans was suspended twice as a result of he just incidents went, on the field on with Lattimore.
Yeah.
Like that that's the stuff
that's
I love.
That's a real beef.
That's a real beef.
Didn't he grab Lattimore and slammed him down?
At least once.
Now that's if they get outside and they see each other.
That's on
they,
time.
Yeah, that, yeah.
They're not seeing each other as much anymore because Lattimore is no longer in the same division. But that was must-see TV. And if you're watching the game, that's sort of the game within the game. If the broadcast could have a Lattimore Evans cam in picture in picture, that may be worth watching more than the actual game.
I like seeing like the Randy Moss and the Darrell Revis, where it wasn't a bunch of it was just two guys going up against one another. I respect your game, you respect my game. Let's go. Or I've watched, you know, Deion Sanders and Andre Rison were teammates and then they end up fighting on the field, but they still, it was because of the competitiveness in both of them. Whether it's you know, Michael Irvin or Deion Sanders or Jerry Rice and Deion Sanders. You know, it was a beef in a sense of the article, but it was more so of just two highly competitive individuals going at one another. Because listen, you can't have what would be deemed as a beef if two individuals are not highly competitive. You're just not going to have it, even if you try to manufacture it. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, it makes for a great article, and some of those, you know, Steve Smith's, you know, sound bites were great, Ice Up and everything else. But at the end of the day, it's about, you know, going out there and competing across from the guy.
Did you ever have a corner that never said anything that you thought?
Yeah, there were a bunch of them.
And that was sort of their game, is they would just never engage. They would just be like robotic. Yeah. I always think that's an icy, cool way to go sometimes if you can stay above it.
Yeah, there were a few of them. But listen, DBs, like receivers,
they're much more apt to talk, you're saying.
Yeah.
They're much.
Yeah. They should have gave DBs and receivers 2 miles in one ear. That's what they should have done. Because they talk enough, both of them.
615-737-1025. Your favorite wide receiver, cornerback, rivalry, beef, whatever you want to call it. 615-737-1025. I'll try to see if I can find some cornerbacks that irk Derek just by mentioning their names. Maybe I can pull one or two out. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, the game.
And even after the penalty, the Saints get a big hold.
Not only is he riding, but watch what he does. He pushes him all the way to the boundary. Now we got a fight on the field.
Whoa.
Mike Evans just punched a guy, and now the benches have cleared. Trying to hold guys back off the sideline. Wow.
It's still going in there.
By the way, Mike Evans has been fined more than $100,000 by the league and suspended twice as a result of his beef with Marshawn Lattimore, while Lattimore was hit with just one fine. So,
has he ever been fined for anything else?
That's a good question.
Or is it only Lattimore that gets to him?
That's a good question.
That's an interesting question.
I'll have to look that up. I don't know.
Because that would be a true
that.
Example of a beef if it's just the one guy that you hate that much. Hockey is littered with these, right?
Yes. Absolutely. But there
agitators.
There is something interesting within this story by Stephen Ruiz, written last week at The Ringer, about being in the golden age of cornerback and wide receiver beef. He notes that the cornerbacks have taken the league as the primary antagonists in most of these beefs. And here is his reasoning. Perhaps this is in part because it's never been harder to play cornerback, and those who do it are under more scrutiny than ever. The league has spent the past few decades rewriting the playbook to nerf pass coverage while the public is armed with all 22 coverage stats, and tracking data. If a cornerback has a bad game, there are a dozen clips of the lowlights on Twitter by noon on Monday. And PFF is posting metrics that put a number on just how badly he was beaten, down to the decimal point. I'm sure that covering Jerry Rice was a horrifying experience back in the day, but Deion Sanders and Daryl Green didn't have to worry about bad film and coverage stats being thrown in their face after a poor performance. On the flip side, wide receivers have never had it better. They're getting paid at premium rates, the rule changes have made it easier to embarrass cornerbacks, and the passing boom has increased their opportunities to do so. It's understandable if cornerbacks carry a little contempt for their positional opposites in their hearts, and unsurprising that they've become the biggest haters in the sport. What do you think about that, Derek?
I think DBs have always, the way they are, I think that's the way they've always been. Because their job is to, and they probably was more so like it, you know, 20, 30 years ago than they are now because of the changes in the rules. Back then, they could jam you all the way back down, all the way down the field. They can hold you. They can throw you to the ground, slam on your head when they attack you, do all that stuff. And they used it as intimidation. So they didn't have to talk as much. Now, they can't use a hard hit across the middle. Usually, you know, some of the most feared people was the people that didn't talk. You think about the great Taylor. They got drafted by the Washington. Sean Taylor, then Washington Redskins. He was probably one of the most feared individuals on the defensive side of the ball. He ain't had no beef with nobody. He let his play do the talking. He was one of those guys. So, you know, you're going to have guys that talk, and I think defensive backs more so now because they can't intimidate you with their physicality. So now it's try to intimidate you with getting in your head, pushing you around, doing these things that will agitate you in hopes that you engage. Because the one thing that I found out is this. If you're not engaging, they're going to stop. If you're not engaging, they're going to stop. That's why
turning the other cheek?
Yeah. No, it's not even necessarily turning the other cheek.
It's so hard to do.
Yeah,
it's so hard to do.
But it's, I'm not engaging with a lot of this stuff that you were doing. It took Andre Johnson games. It wasn't that game. It was games that it just built up.
Minimum.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It built up, and he finally, you know, did that.
And didn't Andre Johnson want to fight Cortland Finnegan in a nightclub or something like that?
I mean, he had said in an article somewhere about that. But what I have found in the NFL is that, listen, they're only going to engage if you engage. If you're not engaging with them or if you're beating them, now every once in a while y'all going to go at one another. But if you're not making it the whole game, then they can't argue with somebody that's not arguing with them.
Okay, I've always wondered about this too. The energy that you expend.
Yes.
The first one that I always saw, and it was just, we're watching Wimbledon right now. Mm-hmm. It just happens to be on. There's big matches happening. But John McEnroe was a guy that I always watched closely. I played quite a bit of tennis when I was a kid. He was left-handed. I was gravitated to him. And, of course, he was crazy on the court.
To say the least.
He was so different than a lot of traditional mm-hmm. tennis people. But he didn't seem to get distracted mm-hmm. when he wasn't trash talking, but mm-hmm. he would have this rage. And it was always asked, like, how does he do it? I feel like there are some people who can get into that trash talk, mm-hmm. but it doesn't get them off of their game. Others aren't as good at it. I feel like I could get pulled into it on a basketball court. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I was better when I did it. Maybe in a few moments, but over time, I do think you can mm-hmm. get distracted or expend more energy than you need to and lose focus.
Yeah, and it's happened.
Where are the percentage lies with that?
I think, at least for me, you know, it a few times it did get to a point where when I was talking, I was like, man, I'm exerting too much energy, like talking with you, and then all of a sudden I stopped. It's just like, no, I, you know, because I'm exerting too much energy, you know, and I'm the one that's running every play. You're not doing what I'm doing. You know, so there are times where I think players, you know, realize that, man, I got, you know, because Brad Hopkins and those guys would tell me a lot of times, man, just get back in the huddle, you know, because it would be after the play and I'm talking trash as I'm walking back, or they're talking trash to me and I'm going back at them. And Brad is like, dude, get back in the huddle, man. Hush, you're wasting too much energy. And we got to get back up to the line. So when you start to see stuff like that and it's affecting the team, then it's like, okay, I need to stop. You know, I can get him another way. I used to just wait. Like, I get you in a blocking play. I get you because the ball's going to come my way. And the one thing I know you hate most is me cutting you. So I'm going to cut you. I'm going to cut you. It may start a bigger fight. I don't know.
Did you have any favorite cornerback wide receiver rivalries growing up watching the game?
No, not really. I mean, I enjoyed, you know, I loved Andre Rison, obviously, because he was a Michigan State guy. And when he and Deion went at it, that was like, yes, a Michigan State guy. And I was biased. I thought Andre Rison got the best of Prime on that play. But then I went back and looked at it like 20 years later. It's like, nah, Prime got the best of him, man. He backed up. Prime didn't back up. So, but beside that, that was my only. Because, again, it was about respect for one another. So they didn't, you know, at least it wasn't covered the way it is covered now.
One texter says, you had beef with Bill Belichick. Actually, Josh, it was Bill Belichick who had beef with Derek Mason.
I didn't have beef with Bill Belichick. Actually, I was talking to Dean Pease. Dean Pease and I were jokingly going at it because Dean Pease was the coach at Michigan State. That's why I first met Dean Pease. He was on that coaching staff with Nick Saban. So then, you know, I spent some time with them in Baltimore as well. But I think that was after. It may have been after that whole episode. But it was Dean Pease and I. He and I were going at, and we were doing it jokingly, just going at one another, because they couldn't guard me. They couldn't, at least not on that series. And, you know, Belichick was right as far as the score, but it's like, dude, I'm enjoying myself. You know, I'm out here and I'm playing a sport that I love. I'm playing a position that I enjoy. I'm having fun. I know we're losing, but I'm doing whatever I can to keep my team in good spirits.
Joey.
See, he's just mad because he couldn't stop me. That's all.
I knew we wouldn't get through these segments without that clip being played.
Yeah.
Joey from Gallatin has a hockey reference in this. Brad Marchand literally licks other grown men's faces to anger them, which
does he?
He did it.
That's like Rodman.
Yeah, he was caught.
Such
that's
a
like
menace.
Dennis Rodman.
Like CJ Gardner-Johnson, good at making someone mad and waiting for the other player to retaliate and draw a penalty.
Oh, that's the best, though. When you see a guy do that, and then all of a sudden he walked away.
What is the greatest length that you've taken to draw a penalty on an opposing player?
Nothing. Other than if you grab me, I'm gonna grab you and I'm not letting go. So that was my thing. We gonna be out here tussling, or and Courtland and I had one of those, but it ended up on the sideline because we kind of both didn't want to let go.
Did you ever get a penalty for taunting or like spiking the ball or anything like that?
Yeah, I did, because it was a horrible play. I mean, it was a horrible call by the ref.
So you were mad at the ref, though.
Yeah,
I was mad
at the ref.
Not calling another player.
Yeah, yeah. No. Not another player. If I got a 15-yarder, it was because I thought the call you made was wrong, or you said it wasn't a catch. Oh, I remember one vividly. We were playing Green Bay, and Woodson and I had our own sort of little deal because it goes back to college. He was a freshman and I was a senior. And I lit his ass up then, and I continued to light his ass up in the NFL. But he's a great player, yeah, nonetheless. But I was running a 9 route, end up catching the ball on him. I end up coming back to the ball, and he was draped around me, and I kind of got it. I didn't push him, but I kind of let him go by me. And I caught the ball, and the ref called a penalty, offensive penalty. Boy, I went berserk on that ref. They threw me a 15-yard penalty. I went. I'm like, man, how in the heck could that have been? I barely even touched him. He was running at me because he got beat. So, yeah, I have gotten a few of those.
Okay.
Yeah, gotten a few of those. Me and the refs.
I got teed up in high school a few times.
Me and the refs have gotten into a... I've had some ref beef, you know, just because they...
Ref beef.
Yeah, ref beef is just...
That's a different category.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
I'll tell you the worst kind of beef. In college, I volunteered... Well, it wasn't volunteering because I did get paid to do it, but...
a paid volunteer.
Yes. Somebody needed to ref the intramural basketball games at American University, so I said, hey, I've got some time. I'll do it.
I like the game of basketball.
Did you take it seriously?
I didn't take it super seriously, but then there was this one guy who would argue with me all the time. I'm like, dude, it's intramural basketball. And eventually I did give him a technical foul because I was like, you've been riding my butt for days. And I'm sick of it.
Hey, man, you stuck in this grove, man.
I want footage of this.
He's trying to make the team, man. He's trying to go to the league, and you stopping him.
It's always the frat boys, too, who are doing those intramural games. Oh, the worst.
Right. Like, he was getting mad because I didn't call a lane violation on a free throw in an intramural basketball game. I'm like, dude, chill.
They had a charity. I think Boomer Esiason was the one that was the head sponsor, mm-hmm. but he had a great flag football tournament, and it was big. And they needed volunteer referees. I was like, hey, I like Boomer Esiason, fellow left-hander. I'll do my part for the community. I like football. And I even had a great high school ref, and I forget his name. He was a great guy. Did high school refing around here forever. He gave me his flag. Uh-huh. So I had the flag. I had a big-time flag. Had the little rice ball in there with the rubber band. It was big time. But, man, I will never – I said after that week, I was like, I'm never doing this again because – they're talking about formations and pick play. It gives flag football. It's all about little shuffling.
Yeah, pick plays and everything.
It wasn't all about who's the fastest, strongest. Yeah. But it did get physical at times. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, man, what do I do? What do I do? And they're like, hey, that's a legal formation. He wasn't on the line of scrimmage. I was like, I'm just a volunteer, man. I came in with one attitude and I left
with a whole different
shell-shocked.
Yeah. Like, whole different outlook.
Running with my tail between my legs.
Yeah, I don't know how referees do it, man.
Ref beef.
I always try to remember this while I'm, you know, and I forget sometimes because I'm often yelling at an ump or a ref, at least in my mind. I've gotten better with age. But, like, who grows up wanting to be a ref? Mm. Like, at all levels. Just, like, it's one thing to make cash on the side, but, like, I'm talking about aspiring to be. So when we criticize officials at the highest level, just remember – number one, how hard it is.
Yeah.
And number two, you just don't have people aspire to do that. It takes a special person to take that job.
I don't know why I'm thinking about this line from the movie School of Rock. Do you remember the movie School of Rock with Jack
Black? I know every
line. Those who can't do, teach. Yes. And those who can't teach, teach Jim.
That's right.
And that's what I'm thinking about with the referees here.
Those who can't play, ref. Maybe.
Those that can't ref.
I actually wish that more ex-players
do intramural.
Yeah.
I do not recommend being an intramural basketball referee if you're in college right now.
To me, you would have better officiating in general. And hockey does this to a degree because you got to be able to skate.
Yeah.
So they scout for players whose career is ending. Like, hey, would you like to ref? Because there's just a small cross-section of the general public that can skate well enough to ref, let alone see the game, understand the game. But I think the more experience you play, you're more cut out to officiate.
Yeah.
But there's not a lot of ex players. And you always talk about one. There's one.
Terry Killens.
Uh-huh. And off the top of your head, is that the only?
I'm sure there are a few, but the only one that I know is Terry.
There's a lot of refs who never really played that much.
I remember seeing for the All-Star game for basketball last year, Richard Jefferson was actually a referee for like the Celebrity All-Star game. Mm. And so like they mic'd him up, and he was just like, yeah, man, this ain't for me.
Yeah.
I don't blame him.
It's not for everybody.
615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on beef. We love beef. Where's the beef? It's what's for dinner. All of those things. 615-737-1025. But coming up next, it's list season, and Jeremy Fowler of ESPN is starting his project. He does every year around this time, I should say. The first list is out. We'll discuss that coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 the game. Joe Rexrow texted us right before we took a break and said, damn near got in a few fistfights as an intramural ref and as a player screaming at other intramural refs. Does that shock you in the slightest?
No, it doesn't shock me with Joe. No, it doesn't.
One of my later games as a the old men's league, and that's another one where I look at I look back on some of my actions, mm-hmm. and I'm not proud. I'm not proud. But there was one case where
those were not some of your better days. Huh?
We were behind. No. What was the situation? We were. I can't remember what the situation. We were behind, or the game was tied. I don't remember the situation, but we were trying to foul. It was a situation where I was trying to foul, but in a men's league, you know, you don't want to tackle somebody, because then you really. I have seen fights break out. It's, you know, 35, 40-year-old people fighting. No, you don't want to do that. The ref should understand this, mm-hmm. right? We're trying to foul. This is a foul situation. Mm-hmm. And he didn't call it. I was like, and so I'll tell you, that's just this one that pops into my head. But I feel where Joe is coming from. It sounds like Joe's been on both sides of this, right?
Oh, yeah.
As a ref and
seems
as a player.
Seemed like it. I wouldn't put it past
Joe.
He's
a short fuse, though.
But this is what I'm talking about with the art of officiating. It really helps if you feel, you have a feel for the game. If the more you've played, the more you understand the game and you understand the situation. There are some blind spots sometimes by people who, and God bless them because they want to do this. They want to do it. They're there. You can't have games without refs, mm-hmm. right? But they just don't feel the game. It's very frustrating sometimes.
So Jeremy Fowler at ESPN. Every year at this time, he releases a position-by-position ranking where he surveys league executives, coaches, and scouts to help him rank the top 10 players at 11 different positions. So today, running backs, no surprise. Saquon Barkley, number one. Derrick Henry, number two. Rounding out the top five, Jahmyr Gibbs, Bijan Robinson, and Christian McCaffrey falling from number one to number five. But here is where I was a bit shocked, guys. Tony Pollard, not only not in the top 10, did not receive an honorable mention or even a vote in this exercise.
Okay, who was voting?
NFL league executives.
Okay.
And coaches and scouts.
Okay, so football people.
Yes. Mm. Tony Pollard
but
does not.
But you're surprised.
I thought that he would at least be. The fact that he didn't even receive a vote. So there's a section called honorable mention. So the top players outside the top 10. And then also receiving votes. No mention of Tony Pollard. So in this exercise, no league person said that Tony Pollard deserved to be in the top 10 of running backs, despite the fact that he did have a 1,000-yard season. I did find that to be a bit surprising.
I think this is also how we have to recalibrate our minds. And we were just having a conversation about the changing salary cap in hockey. And your mind sometimes is slow to adjust. But in our minds, I think we've always we've had it ingrained in our head, 1,000-yard season mm-hmm. equals good. But when I started watching football, it was 14 games. So 1,000 yards, that was a big thing. On your football card, if a guy got 1,000 yards, like, ooh, 1,000-yard receiver or 1,000-yard mm-hmm. rusher. That was in 14 games. Even when it was 16 games. It was okay, but now 17 games, 1,000 yards, you got to tell me more. 1,000 yards means nothing, really, in terms of top 10. So it doesn't surprise me at all that he's not in the top 10.
Yeah.
For a team that won three games?
Yeah, because
he shouldn't be in the top 10.
His problem is, if you look at each one of these running backs, they have like that it or that superpower. You look at Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry. Jahmyr Gibbs, you know, Bijan Robinson, even Christian McCaffrey, who I don't think should be on this list, honestly. He missed too many damn games.
I agree.
He's no better than the next, you know, a guy that is fully healthy but can't give you anything. He's just, does he have the talent? Have we seen it? You know, yeah, but in, you know, he's missed, you know, 10 or more games in the past three seasons. I don't see how in the hell they even put him on this list, but they did. But you start looking at some of these guys, and you put, you know, the Titans running back in. Why am I losing his name now?
You're talking about Pollard?
Pollard. You throw Pollard in there, he doesn't wow you. Pollard is, he's consistent. And at the running back position, 1,000 yards, like you said, 10 years ago, if you have consistency every year, 1,000 yards, 10, 15, that was great. Now they look at 1,000 yards as, okay, yeah, that's something. If you play, you know, 16, 17 games, you should get 1,000 yards. It's you are a consistent 1,000-yard rusher, but you're not giving us the other things. Right. Like, you know, the dynamic plays out of the backfield, the dynamic plays catching the football. You're not giving us that extra stuff.
There's and all of these backs are doing diversity. It. Yeah. Like, can you catch the ball? Can you block on third down? Like,
or are you giving us dynamic
yards
plays?
Per carry? Yeah, what's your success rate? There's all these different measures now.
Yeah, because he is, like, if you're just talking about consistency, knowing what I'm going to get out of a running back, He is a top 10 running back because I know exactly what I'm going to get out of him. But if you're talking about his impact on the game, it doesn't come close to the guys that they named. It just doesn't. He's going to consistently go out and do his job, but they're not going to put the game on his back. And every running back on this list, their teams, they believe can put the game on their back.
By the way,
in a sense.
Derrick Henry, number two on the list. Someone ranked him number six.
Seriously?
Who did that? Highest ranking one, lowest ranking six. Last year's ranking nine. So he moved up from nine to two, but someone ranked Derrick Henry number six.
That's a little strange. Especially with the year. There's always that person that says, he's not a third down back. You know, he doesn't on the field.
Derrick Henry is the greatest runner in the last 10 years in the NFL, maybe even 15 years.
What's interesting as well, I think Jeremy Fowler is rolling this out this year. He's also listing the running backs who fell out of the top 10 or by position. So in this case, the running backs. So the three running backs who fell out of the top 10 versus last season, Breece Hall, who went from number two last year to out of the top 10. Nick Chubb, number three, but he suffered a serious injury. And Travis Etienne went from number 10 out of the top 10.
See, that doesn't make sense because Christian McCaffrey hadn't played at all. He's missed damn near each season over the last three seasons.
He's,
but again,
he's living off
them
his
in
reputation.
There. Exactly. So these other guys can't live off their reputation? That's what makes this sort of ranking sort of.
Well, here's what.
How low did Barkley slip before last year's resurgence? I'm curious about that because that.
He had to be.
I'll
out of
bet
the top
you he
10.
Was floating around low in the top 10.
He was fourth entering the season last year, but I don't know how far he has fallen in other rankings. But he entered
been
last
year
season
that.
At number four.
Yeah, it'd have been a year before that because last year, the year before he got to Philly, he had a good season with the Giants. That was after the knee injury, and then obviously this year. He led him to a Super Bowl victory.
Here's what I'm interested in. Tomorrow, defensive tackles.
Ooh.
I am interested to see
where Jeff is.
Where Jeffrey Simmons is because Jeffrey Simmons tends to be on these lists. And last season, I believe he was in the top five. He was either number four or number five. So I will be looking at this tomorrow because I'm interested to see how the perception of Jeffrey Simmons may have changed year over year. So we will discuss that tomorrow.
Yeah, and this is because we mentioned this, Adam, last week, and we were talking about, you know, how many Titan players are in the top 10 at their position or in their grouping, because we grouped all the offensive linemen together, all the defensive linemen together. How many of those guys are top 10, top 15 guys? And based upon what we looked at, even numbers, they had no one that was a top 10, 12 guy. And I'm sure outside of probably Jeffrey Simmons and Tavondre Sweat will be an honorable mention, I'm sure. But outside those two guys, who else do they have that are top 10, 12 players?
615-737-1025. We will continue the conversation coming up next with Teron Davenport, ESPN, NFL Nation, Titans reporter, who was also in New York over the weekend, was in attendance for at least one game of the Subway Series. We'll talk with Teron coming up next, 615-737-1025. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.